Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're back talking to our friend and noteworthy Niall Sargent. But before we do that, a quick plug for some of the pods that have come out. Just, we did launch a new podcast called Built Different, which is Joella is putting out once a week, Saturday morning. And you know what, guys? It's fantastic to be involved with actually young people, Martin.
Yeah. You'd forgotten what they're like through this pandemic, but they do exist. Don't
well, they actually terrify me. But no, it's a great podcast. I'd recommend go to tortoiseshack.ie/builtdifferent. Check it out. The third one is coming, and I'm delighted to be helping produce it. And it's conversations that we haven't had on the Tortoise Shack, to be fair. You know,
we can't have them. We're too old and we're too old, Tony.
Too old, too male, pale and stale, as they say, Martin. Speaking of unpale, unstale, but definitely a hot mail. Sorry, I'm going to have to cut that. I'm leaving it in for patrons. We are delighted to be joined again by our friend Niall Sargent. Niall, how are you keeping, buddy?
It was good before you said that. Thanks.
Listen, Niall, you've written a three-part huge investigation as part of it. Again, this being you, people understand the level of detail you go into on these. There's so much to unpack here, but we might start with the cull of seals. Niall, do you want to just give listeners, if they haven't read it, a flavour of part one of this?
Yeah, so thanks, Tony. I suppose, to start off, this is an investigation looking at the potential environmental impacts of the salmon farming industry in Ireland. So if people aren't too aware, salmon farming is essentially where salmon are kept up to hundreds of thousands in circular pens or nets along shallow bays on the west coast of Ireland. It's the biggest aquaculture industry in Ireland. I think it's worth about an estimated over 125 million last year. So like compared to all the other aquaculture sectors like mussels and clams and all the other shellfish, I mean, they pale in comparison to how much this industry brings in. So it's a lot of money it brings in every year. One thing I suppose hasn't been looked at in a long time in Ireland is potential impact on the marine environment. So the article as a whole looked at, you know, several issues, lice, sea lice control on the farms, other diseases on farm. We looked at the licensing process, effluent discharge, waste discharge, all those issues. I think the first one that we put out that really piqued people's interest was something that I was surprised myself to find was happening, was that over the last 5 years, there have been protected seals that have been culled by salmon farms, granted licenses by the National Parks and Wildlife Service, which they are the controlling body that would give out these licenses. But I think it would surprise people that the organization for protecting species is also giving out licenses to cull them. So that was interesting. I have to say, we only looked for the last 5 years of information. So I'm not sure if this practice has been going on further. They gave out 11 licenses to cull small numbers of seals. So it's one or two what would be deemed troublesome species that would be trying to eat the salmon from those farms. I suppose even if it's only small numbers that were shot, seal numbers are coming back now. They're higher than they were obviously previously, but they are a protected species for a reason. And environmental NGOs that spoke to us were quite shocked and concerned with the findings and highlighted that there is no scientific evidence out there to support that, you know, shooting these seals will make any impact on what they do for salmon farms. And if you're even killing the seals that were supposedly troublesome in the first place, because they can travel long, long distances in one day. They don't particularly have, like myself, very long hair that could identify them from maybe Martin or yourself if we were out in the sea. So the idea that shooting them from a long distance from a rifle, you can guarantee those are the seals that were troublesome, I think worried people. And also the fact that, at the point of the MPWS, while they put conditions in these licenses, they did tell us that, you know, site visits are not generally undertaken because of resource issues. The MPWS is stretched across the board. This is well founded. Their funding has been slashed in recent years. It's nothing compared to what it was before the financial crash in 2008, and they're only starting to come back now. They don't have the resources to police and enforce a lot of these things. And you can imagine trying to keep track of this would be very, very difficult for them to do.
I'm going to pause the podcast for a moment to ask you for your support. We are putting out a phenomenal amount of podcasts at the moment. We are going in depth, trying to cover Dublin Bay South, trying to cover policing, some of the issues that have come up with there are also we're doing a policing on events in the north very soon. We've got a lot on, Martin, as you know, and but unfortunately it needs to be paid for. And one of the ways this stays free is if you can pay, you can pay that to keep it out there. And that means other people maybe benefit who can't pay. And I know that sounds like a utopian dream, but I believe it can be done. I believe people actually care about the greater good. If we didn't, we wouldn't be doing this pod, Martin.
Well, they do, Tony, because they've said so. And they've told us that, you know, people have been very straightforward about this. They would like to see the pods available for everybody. So that's how we fund it. You know, we make it available for everybody. It's just that we need more of you to help. That's it, full stop.
Yeah. Look, it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. There's a range of tiers there. There are exclusives. There's loads of exclusives and extra content because, you know, we there are certain things we do that will never go out beyond the paywall, probably for good defamation reasons, Martin, but nonetheless.
Yeah.
But it's really, really top quality stuff. And it's a great community. Really love the patrons who support. And I do, if you're a patron and you're listening, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we really do appreciate it. But yeah, Tony's right. More patrons, patreon.com/tortoiseshack.
Let you get back to your podcast. Thank you.
How many sales are they killing now?
The numbers we have is quite low in terms of the numbers. There's 11 licenses given out. I think it was confirmed 8 or 9 seals were killed, either grey seal or common or harbour seal. So it's small numbers, but I mean, the cumulative impact, like there are seals killed, natural causes in the marine environment from overfishing, from plastic pollution, from other pollutants. There was a lot of controversy last year. There was calls for fisheries industry to be able to cull seals, which was quite strongly kicked back by the public who did not want to see that. And I think
at the time, the Minister for Housing, who had responsibility for this in his remit, Dara O'Brien, has issued a series of tweets, I recall, saying this isn't happening and it's not ongoing.
It was rolled back on quite heavily when the public, due to the public reaction to it. They got, I think my colleague Maria Delaney did a fantastic investigation on the environmental and other impacts of the general fisheries industry. And this was one thing she looked at, and she got released, I think it was over 50 letters. We highlight this in the first part as well, of people who were shocked at the potential for this pilot seal culling project to come in, saying that the minister, I think one quote is great, does the minister want to make us the European capital of cruelty and other things. So it's one part of a wider system. You know, this is a small number of seals that we're aware of that were killed through this licensing process, but there's a lot of other impacts that could potentially see a reversal of the good work that's taken place to increase populations of the two protected species of seal.
It is actually, that's a really good point. I mean, we're talking about something 100 years after they were made a protected species, you know, trying to make a bounce back, and we were talking about, and we saw the calls for long distance rifles, and you were going, oh my God, like...
But there can hardly be a justification to kill 9-10 seals when in these nets that you've spoken about, there can be up to 400,000 salmon in a net. Am I right about that, Niall?
Yeah, it can vary by farm. You can have smaller numbers, but some of the farms are licensed to hold exactly up to hundreds of thousands. And you know, it's you can almost, it's almost like them, it's food in a barrel almost for the seals. So I mean, it's in, you could argue as well, it's in their natural environment along the coastal areas. So I think we didn't really go into detail in the first one. We just wanted to highlight like that this practice was happening. But I think there are arguments to be made as well of, is that the best approach to resolving the problem, or is there a need, you know, should the emphasis be on further investment by the salmon farming industry to ensure greater protection within the nets or whatever it may be? Because, you know, it brings in, like I said, a significant chunk of money every year to the Irish economy, the farms. the larger farms at least are profitable. That's clear in their own financial records. So I think there's an argument to be made of is this the best approach, especially when it can't be guaranteed that the site visits will be done, that it's checked out. And again, how do you confirm that these are the specific troublesome seals that you are shooting? And of course, there's going to be seals to replace them coming along. So are they going to be next for the licensing process if it's allowed to continue?
I suppose that actually is a nice way to segue into part two, because it does talk about the fact that we can say the real problem is these seals who tweeted bad stuff previously and we need to cancel them. But instead of that, we could actually look at the actual underlying cause. There's a lot of issues in the salmon farming as it is. And you highlight that in great detail and great depth. And again, guys, the links will be on the podcast. Do click, but take get yourself a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, because it's going to take you a while to go through it. But it's well worth doing it. And it's a huge undertaking. I mean, just I think I'm right in saying just in the salmon farming one, there was 20 AIE requests that you did, you know, under. So it's a lot of work, Niall, in fairness to you. Do you just give us a flavor of some of the findings you had on that?
Yeah, so the second one looked, I guess, more, it tried to pack a lot in there. It looked at the more general potential environmental impacts of the salmon farming industry. So the key one, I suppose, that we honed in on was sea lice controls on the farm. So sea lice are essentially small crustaceans that will attach themselves to the salmon and can cause, you know, very debilitating disease and impact or parasite for them. Not just, obviously, they cause an impact on the farm salmon, but on wild species as well, they're an issue. We found that there was, things have really improved over the last number of years. Like, there are lots of controls in place. There's 14 inspections, I think, from the Marine Institute every year. Cases are lower, but we still, when you dig into it, there were still over 40 cases of what they call elevated levels of the sea lice on the farms. They gave out over 30 notices to treat, which essentially is telling the farms this problem is out of control. So you need to, you know, do some form of treatment to get it under control because of the potential impacts on the wider environment. We also found that there were, you know, there some details held on disease outbreaks on farms by the state agencies, but actually the farms themselves only have to notify the state for a particular number of diseases notifiable under EU law. So there's lots of other diseases as well that are voluntarily reported. There's no regulation that says you have to. In fairness, the companies will provide information on certain diseases when there's large mortality events. But again, it's self-reporting in that sense. And it's the same what I said with the mortality events. It's only if there's really a large mortality events that the farms will have to send information to the state. And again, it's predominantly on a voluntary basis. Another one, I mean, they're not as sexy as the seals, but wild wrasse, that's another one we looked at. Now, they're essentially cleaner fish. So, you know, when you see in those nature documentaries, the smaller fish they might be taking sea lice, for example, off the bigger fish. So they have an important role in cleaning other fish, keeping them disease-free in the marine environment. You find them in protected areas, nature protected areas, marine protected areas along the west coast of Ireland, which also you will find a lot of the salmon farms in the same areas. They're in or close to protected areas. So the wild rash has a very important role in the reef environment, but they're also been now used by the salmon farm industry as cleaner fish to take off the sea lice. So we found since 2015, this sort of basically exploded. There's been almost 2 million wild rash taken from the wild. And importantly, there's very little to no state regulation from what we've seen. Like, we have internal documents released to us by several agencies and government departments, and it seems no one really has a full handle on this, despite acknowledging the potential, very serious potential environmental impact and impact for the future of the wrasse species. Like, if you're taking out the breeding population for them, this could have impacts down the line, but it essentially hasn't been monitored so far, and the documents we have really reveal that. And the last one, I know general touch over, I might go back to the sea lice after, but we also showed that you know, while there aren't a huge number of escapes in Ireland compared to other salmon farming countries, and I would say one reason for this is we have a much smaller salmon farming industry than, say, Scotland or Norway. So the numbers are lower here, but experts have told us we're not really doing the baseline monitoring, the monitoring we need to do for when there is an escape, that we have the correct information to identify the impact on the marine environment or potential impact. Because if those fish escape potentially in large numbers in an area where you have, you know, large numbers of wild salmon, and the impact that they can have on that breeding species of the wild salmon could be very impactful. And it would make sense to know where those fish have come from. I'll just give a quick example. In Norway, they are actually monitoring individual farms for the genetic makeup of the salmon and tagging them so that if they get loose, they can identify right back to the farm potentially. If they get the right fish at the right moment, they can trace it all the way back. We're not doing the same sort of thing here. So experts have warned if this industry is going to expand, we really need to start doing this now. And we haven't, and we're in trouble as well with this NASCO. It's a North Atlantic salmon organization of the main salmon farming countries. This has been examined by scientists, and they said we're not doing enough really on sea lice and containment or escapes in line with what needs to be done internationally.
Now, can I ask you, Niall, I'll just go back a little to sea lice. When you can have up to and hundreds of thousands of salmon in a artificial area that's created for them, is that what causes the predominance of sea lice? Does that happen in the wild? Would you have the same levels of sea lice?
You definitely have sea lice there, obviously, as well as one in the marine environment in the wild. This is, I guess, the most difficult part of this. It's very difficult to say without long-term scientific experimentation and evidence to back it up. We did speak with, I'd say, the preeminent scientist in this area, Paddy Gargan from Inland Fisheries Ireland, who's been examining this issue for over 20 years with fantastic evidence from the River Erith in Mayo, which is a protected area for wild salmon breeding populations. They have data prior to the salmon farms arriving in Ireland in large numbers in the late 80s and for all the period since. And, you know, their research, particularly the stuff from Paddy Gargan, has very conclusively shown that their numbers show that there has been an impact on the wild salmon species from sea lice, particularly after there's been heavy sea lice on nearby farms where the salmon would be coming back into the river system. They have shown that, and also for sea lice, sea trout, it's pretty well documented that, you know, the sea lice and other impacts from salmon farming has had a big impact on the dramatic decline in sea trout populations in Ireland. So I didn't really cover how the impacts happen. I mean, these salmon farms are just off the coast. There's hatcheries inland where they're essentially, they need fresh water where they're raised, and then they're in the bay areas. They interact obviously very clearly with sea trout and wild Atlantic salmon, because especially the salmon they're coming to and from, they spend some of their life in the freshwater, obviously, and then in most of their life in the marine environment before coming back to freshwater to breed. So they will be interacting in the same areas and same waters where the salmon farms are. And the same with the sea trout, who can actually spend long periods of their life at the mouths of, say, estuaries or in bays. So there's lots of potential impact. And like I said, you can't say in every case conclusively, you know, if you see sea lice in the wild, you can't say, oh, that's definitely because of a salmon farm. But I think if anyone wants to check it out, the research that Paddy Gargan has done with the Inland Fisheries Ireland is quite conclusive. And there's research from Norway, Canada, Scotland as well, which would point, you know, there is a fingerprint there connecting the impact.
I feel like we haven't got into the depth that you do in the actual articles, and I'm going to recommend people read the articles. But there's also a third part that goes into more issues with the licensing around many of these farms. And that is, it's kind of jaw-dropping, and yet it's not surprising, because it just, we're going to use that phrase, it's very Irish, isn't it, to say that we have this, you know, we have this issue, we know about this issue, but sure, isn't that how we deal with it at the last while, and no one seems to want to grasp the nettle. You might explain what I mean, Niall.
Yeah, like you said, you see a lot of these, especially around the environmental and climate stuff, particularly the biodiversity, you see a lot of issues around problems with, say, environmental assessments and things that continue on for decades until the European Commission brings us to court, and then something may happen. So essentially, in the third part, we essentially looked at the aquaculture or fish farming licensing system. So these salmon farms need a license to operate, as do other like clam and shellfish in the aquaculture sector. Problem is with the licensing problem, a lot of them, like I said, are based in protected areas or near protected areas. So these things called appropriate assessments should have been carried out to assess the potential impact, and importantly, the cumulative impact potentially on these protected areas in the marine environment. We weren't, according to the European Commission, we weren't doing this adequately in Ireland for quite a long period of time. They eventually took us to the European courts in 2007. The courts found against us in a very big case, not just for aquaculture, a whole range of environmental things where we weren't doing assessments properly. So basically that put a big block on the licensing system, and the government had to now do these environmental appropriate assessments. Everything got delayed. Licenses were going to expire for lots of the salmon farms. So the government brought in what was meant to be a short-term legislative fix. So they brought in this rule that would allow the farms to continue to operate until their license was looked at again. If their license was about to expire, if they applied for a new one, they could continue until this backlog was looked through by the government, the appropriate assessments were done. And then they would give them a new license potentially. Again, this was 2009, this came in. We found that now today there are over 20 salmon farms who have continued to operate still with expired licenses by virtue of this little piece of legislation. While the appropriate assessments have been done for most of the bays now, the protected areas, you also have to do environmental impact assessments. So that's another a separate European directive. You have to do a wider impact, not just for the direct environmental impact, like the potential climate impacts, the impact from transport movements, movement of fish, all those things. So it's wide ranging. Those still haven't been done either for over 20 of those farms. So it's a very significant issue that, you know, could potentially land us in hot water with the European Commission, who very clearly have said that this rule was supposed to be a short-term fix, and we should have got through this backlog and removed it a long time ago. So yeah, so the issue that's developed recently about this is the largest salmon farming company in Ireland and the world, Maui. The Department of the Marine has in the last few years been investigating them for potential breaches of the license conditions, for either putting too many fish onto the farms or harvesting more fish than they're supposed to within a particular year. And that could have, you know, environmental impacts because of that. We got lots of documents released to us on each case. Some of this was publicly available already, but there were five cases we looked at, and in only one of those did the government take the license away because, you know, the evidence was quite strongly in favor. This has now been challenged by the company, but in all the other cases, the department decided to change the license conditions rather than go further, despite recommendations by expert staff within the department that they should revoke the licenses in all cases. Again, this is complicated by the fact that these are continuing on all licenses in most cases that have expired. And there's very little you can do in terms of penalties apart from either change the conditions or take the license away. And if you take the license away, that's immediately open to legal challenge. There's no graduated penalties to say, okay, you're overstocking, you have to pay X amount or whatever it might be. So I think one environmental NGO we spoke to said it's essentially this suicidal system that we have in place where it's either, you know, that's the option, let things continue, or you have to just take the license away, which in some cases would be maybe a step too far. So that's essentially, we're in this position now where these farms are continuing to operate, potential breaches of licenses in some cases. And it's it's difficult to say exactly when, you know, this system is going to be resolved. The governments have said that they have a lot of these environmental impact assessments coming in now. The deadline for them all to be received is, I think, the end of next month. And then they'll start that process. But like I said, we're already quite a significant way on from 2007. And the fact there's so many licenses that have expired, but the farms continue under this system, I think we're our best pleased.
We've spoken recently about we've heard how Ireland has, you know, worries food insecurity. We've talked about the issues that they need, and this is potentially aquaculture is potentially one source of protein for people in Ireland and across the globe. Aquaculture is intensive. Obviously, this is. They sort of, you know, we're not doing it in the numbers, as you point out, at say Scotland and Norway, but I think it was 127 million euro worth of business last year.
It's very important within that sector. And this is one of the things, like Maui, that company Maui have, you know, control the majority of the market in Ireland. They're a very, very large company. Make it very clear, in all these cases, they've denied that they breached the license conditions. They put a lot of information forward to the department, arguing their case. And they do make some good points as well about how the licensing system is so outdated, like they're waiting so long themselves for these license renewals. But it was quite clear from the main expert investigating this within the department, that they were very conclusive that the findings they had showed breaches. They were very, very clear. And, you know, they made very clear arguments that allowing, not taking more significant action in these cases was a de facto anti-competitiveness measure. And that, you know, if, you know, this could be perceived by environmental NGOs and others within the public, of just allowing the companies in the industry to set their own limits, essentially. So they're quite conclusive on their findings. So I think some of this information might put things in a new light now about the industry potentially, and if it is going to grow, the controls that need to be in place to ensure, you know, the licenses system is very rigid going forward. And I do expect changes. I mean, there should be changes coming in soon. There was a whole process, a whole committee set up to look at the aquaculture licensing system. There's recommendations that are there on the minister's desk for a few years to be implemented. So I think something will have to change.
Which minister?
This will be the minister for the marine. So the Department of DAFM, the Department of Agriculture, Food, Agriculture and the Marine. So it'll have to change soon.
There is huge money in this globally, Niall. I mean, the likes of Maui. Maui's worth about $4 billion. I mean, it's a massive, massive company. So there is potential to do this better. Is it just that Ireland is far behind other countries on regulating this?
It kind of depends. Like we're in terms of actually the sea lice monitoring, in some ways we're very good. Like the fact that there's 14 assessments, like inspections by the Marine Institute every year. It's quite controlled. There have been massive drop-off in the number, but, you know, the European Commission have said we have a very good system for that. But again, then the parameters you have within that monitoring system has been questioned by inland fisheries and others in terms of the limit, like the levels we set where it's above which it's, below which it's okay levels monitored, if that makes sense. That, you know, the thresholds might be could be more conservative, I think, is the argument. So like we're good on some. I would say that whole licensing thing is the biggest issue. From everyone I spoke to, like, it's under fire from all sides in the fact that it's quite outdated for the aquaculture license itself, and the fact that I think the biggest issue comes back that there is those environmental impact assessments haven't been carried out yet, and I think they might make a difference to see, because you have to take the impact on the farms as a whole in the bay. So look, we're doing there. If you look at there is quite a rigid regulatory system on paper, and there are a lot of inspections taken every year. There is a monitoring ongoing. But I think there's an issue in terms of these potential, you know, cases of the license breaches. A lot of it is retrospective. You know, you can't necessarily say there was an environmental impact when you're only looking at the documentation 6 months later that showed there were potential overstocking, you can't really verify then the environmental impact in real time, the way the licensing model is set up. And in fairness, the salmon farming industry, as well as environmental NGOs, and I think the European Commission, would like to see an overhaul of the system, maybe for different reasons in some aspects, but I think everyone agrees it's quite outdated and needs to change.
Just one thing, I want to go right back to the beginning again. The seal's been called this, the response we saw, as you said, it was a huge pushback. The article outlines 50 letters, emails that came in from the public. It outlines a lot of that. In terms of that argument, the signal that it sent seemed to be that you can't really monitor what's going on if fishermen are engaging in this and if it's been engaged. And I know you said that there was licenses issued and there was 10 seals, troublesome seals or whatever, that, you know, they didn't have a good childhood, the father left or whatever it was, and they decided to cull them. How do we actually break? It reminds me, like, I don't know if you saw it this week, Noel, 21 eagles reintroduced to Kerry. You know, they brought, and you're just thinking to yourself, going, and the last batch, you know, there was people killing them. That was happening. I mean, are we fighting a losing battle here, or are we sending the wrong signals when there still are licenses being issued to do this?
Yeah, I think it's an issue with the knowledge that the MPWS is, you know, it's so under-resourced and understaffed. So it's very much like the planning system. You know, the a permission is given out with conditions, and we've seen it across the environmental areas, particularly, you know, quarries and some other areas. Lots of conditions get put into these licenses and they're never enforced. And I know myself from experience living, I live very close to certain quarries, and I know some have been, you know, in breach, one in particular in breach of many conditions. And this is well known to the council. And it's the same, like, you know, I can see similar issues here of, if the marine industry, like they said, don't have the resources to necessarily carry out the site visits for these things, it's going to be an issue if the industry grows and there are potentially more interactions with seals. As the seal populations hopefully continue to flourish, there will be more interactions. So one thing, I mean, we don't go into in detail of solutions, I suppose, for the future, but I mean, more funding for the MPWS in particular would be very, very important. Like I said, changes to that licensing system. There are little tweaks that you could put in, like the fact of maybe, yeah, it could be determined that for a farm to get a license, they have to have cameras installed on the pens, which some obviously would already, that can be then monitored and sent back in real time to the department. That for conditions that of the licenses, that, you know, maybe monthly information needs to be provided as part of these licenses, monthly stocking numbers, monthly harvesting rates, the in real time monitoring camera information to send back to the Department of Agriculture, to the Marine, to check on these things more regularly. Those things alone are small changes, but would make a massive difference. And in fairness to the Department of the Marine, in those particular cases I mentioned, they did change conditions in some of them for monthly, you know, real-time monitoring of movements of fish onto the farms. And they do make a difference because, you know, the things have, you know, the numbers have been okay on most of, on those farms. So those small changes make a big difference. But again, if the industry is going to grow, I would say, you know, you need to make sure the state bodies and if they're semi-state, state agencies, departments have the resources in place to make sure that the industry is fully regulated. And, you know, there are arguments, I think, to be made that even the department itself is quite stretched quite thin with all, you know, it has forestry licensing on its plate, everything. The MPWS is stretched thin. Probably the Marine Institute and the Sea Fisheries Protection Agency could do it more, you know, more support as well. So you have to really look at those core issues. The industry in Ireland, compared to other large salmon farming countries, is very, very small. And if we're going to grow it, as is suggested by the state, we really need to look at ensuring that the regulations are improved going forward.
Well, last question from me now. If you were going to have some salmon tomorrow, would you check which farm it came from and check it against your data?
Well, I'm vegetarian on my way to veganism, so that's not an issue for for me per se. I would say, I think these things are just for people to contemplate, you know, like I've seen a lot of stuff about there about like what's in the salmon itself, et cetera. I mean, there's fairly rigid checks. It's not something we looked at in terms of, you know, the actual food quality side of it. But obviously I think people should really, I guess I would encourage them to read the articles and have a think about their purchasing choices of their food going forward potentially. But that's an individual choice. You make what you will. I suppose the information is out there for people to make a decision on
exercise
what happens before the food ends up on your plate. I think it's the same. Everyone needs to look at it, including me, for the choices I make and the food I eat. Everyone needs to do it, I think.
Niall Sargent, good point to leave that. Thank you very much for coming on and having this chat with us. Again, fabulous work by yourself. You'd never leave a stone unturned. Yeah, and we appreciate your work.
Give the old noteworthy a plug there, Niall, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, Phil, thank you very much. Noteworthy.ie, go check out our work. Our model, if you're not aware of it, is our ideas for our stories are crowdsourced from the public, and then we put out proposals based on that for investigation, and it's crowdfunded. So you know, we're community driven. We want to know what stories you think need to be investigated, turn over those rocks, things that haven't necessarily been looked at in the wider media landscape, and then we put them out to funding for the public as well. So we'd love your support for individual projects, but we also take one-off contributions, monthly contributions. So we would really appreciate the support going forward so we can do more investigations and tell the stories that need to be told, and give these two guys here a cup of coffee as well every month or more if you can, because their work is incredibly important as well in giving myself and others a voice to talk about these issues in details that honestly I don't think existed in the Irish media landscape only a few years ago. So help these guys out as well. Please.
Thanks, Niall. Really appreciate it. And I do recommend it, guys. Even the last few weeks from your work, Peter Maguire's work, Maria Delaney's work, and congratulations, you guys got mentioned as a source in the media as someone trusted by the public for the first time. And that's really great to see. So it's breaking through. And it's a hard slog. So people know it is a hard slog when you're asking people to put their hands in their pockets to do it. But I tell you, the work actually has value. So support it, guys. Talk to you all soon. We'll be back later. We've Bridget Purcell from PBP running in Dublin Bay South. She has had a great campaign. It'll be interesting. I'm interested. It's the first time I got to speak to her. So looking forward to that. We'll talk to you all then. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin. Martin and Tony. Speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.